I have to start with a little bit of an apology for those of you who have been listening to my son and his promises about this service. Apparently, at least some of you heard that this was going to be a real fire and brimstone sermon. I don't know how to do that. I'd have to go back to school and relearn something I don't even believe. So that really won't be where we're going. But I do want to say that Bill and I have appreciated this church, this congregation, over the years since Than and Mary Ann moved here. 9 years ago, we've been kind of slipping in, sitting somewhere. We haven't met a lot of you, but we've learned to appreciate this congregation, this community. We were here for Hazel's baptism some 7 years ago this month. For many of Randy's challenging sermons, many of which are even memorable, which you can't always say about a sermon, and music, so much wonderful music. Most of all, we have appreciated the warm welcome that this congregation extends to all people, the strength of this community of faith that goes beyond any given pastor. And so on June 11th, we joined this church family in singing along with Hazel, "Don't worry about a thing, because every little thing is going to be all right." A couple months ago, when we were in town, Randy and I were talking about this service. He knew that I had been invited to preach, and he gave me a word of advice. Never talk about your kids from the pulpit. Now, I agree with Randy on practically everything, but on this one point, I beg to disagree. So perhaps you will indulge me in a story about my son, who is biting his fingers and trying not to look up as I speak. Actually, I've always suspected that it was Than's influence that led me into the ministry as a second career pastor. The thing was, I pretty much had to become a pastor because I had already raised a PK, a preacher's kid. You know, the stereotype of the PK, the child who challenges authority, breaks the rules, asks the questions that no one else will dare to ask. That was, and that is, Than Hit. The teenager who set off firecrackers in the park and then ran from the police. The kid who rode a friend's motorcycle through the neighborhood without a license, thus earning his first, but most assuredly not his last, traffic citation. Rule breaking, authority challenging, questioning. Those very traits that don't serve adolescents particularly well have turned out to be life skills that have served science and the public interest quite nicely. Well, I tell you those stories in part to embarrass my son, but in part because the gospel lesson for today has the potential to do the same thing if we listen deeply, to challenge authority, to break the rules, and to pose the questions that no one else dares to ask. So listen to today's lesson from the Gospel according to Matthew, Jesus' instruction to his disciples as he sent them out to serve the hungry, the sick, the outcasts of his day. Matthew writes this, "Whoever welcomes you welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me. Whoever gives even a cup of cold water to one of these little ones in the name of a disciple, truly I tell you, none of these will lose their reward." That's our text today, and on the surface, it doesn't seem to be a particularly countercultural message, does it? We're quite familiar, even comfortable, with the idea of hospitality. Welcoming others sharing a cup of cold water with those who are thirsty, literally and figuratively. That's pretty basic church stuff these days, isn't it? Especially in a congregation such as this. And it was even more basic in Jesus' day. The people of God have always known the importance of hospitality. The earliest stories of the Jewish people are stories of refugees, dependent on others. Abraham and Sarah, who left their home and became sojourners in a foreign land. Israelites who struggled as slaves in Egypt and later as exiles in Babylon. The story of the Jewish people is the story of God's chosen refugees. They knew the importance of hospitality. They suffered when hospitality was not extended to them, and so they understood that they were to offer hospitality to refugees in their own midst. Of course, Jesus knew and embraced these stories from his own Jewish tradition, and so he sent his disciples out to serve those in need, emphasizing that even the smallest kindness, something as simple as giving a cup of cold water to one who is thirsty, that such an act matters. It's so simple, but so profound, because it brings us face to face with those who are thirsty, up close and personal, one-on-one, equal in our need for the water that sustains life. There's no substitute for such an act of kindness because it is the essence of love. Love as relationship, love as connection, love as community that embraces all people, not just the comfortable and well-adjusted, but also especially those on the margins. The poor, the outcast, the unloved and unlovely, everyone who thirsts. When we give a cup of cold water to someone who is thirsty, we not only give life to them, but we receive life ourselves. The Holy One in us touches the Holy One in the other, and we both are changed. We both have our eyes opened. Open so that when we hear a little voice at 3 o'clock in the morning calling out for water from the bedroom over, we learn something about who we are as parents. We have our eyes open so that when we reach out to a stranger who is thirsty or hungry or homeless, we learn something about ourselves as neighbors. Getting up close and personal with others helps us, in the words of the Buddhist tradition, see rightly. It helps us see the invisible threads that bind all humankind, the thirsts we share, the injustices we abhor, the hopes we harbor, and the dreams we dream. When we are in relationship with those who struggle, we can see beyond our own relatively comfortable lives to the bigger picture, to those who lack the basic necessities of life, and we're moved to take action on a larger scale. We find ourselves involved in political action to help bring about a world where all have access to clean water, to food, to health care, to education, to human rights and human dignity. Engagement in social justice is a hallmark of the Presbyterian tradition and of this congregation, where as a community and as individuals, you touch lives through direct action and political engagement. The personal and the political, both are essential. The challenge, though, is that political action so often and so easily becomes divorced from people in need. We need look no further than our own Congress as it tries to legislate behind closed doors. as senators and representatives avoid town halls, refusing to meet with people who are thirsty for justice, for health care, for jobs, for hope. One of the hallmarks of our current administration is its absence of concern for the little ones among us, for the needs of the people who are so often invisible. Clean water? No. Clean air? No. Climate protections? No. Racial justice? No. Reproductive rights? No. LGBT equality? No. A living wage, equal pay? No, no, no. The list goes on and never seems to end. And so it's easy to criticize those who aren't listening to the needs of the poor. It's easy to criticize those who live in the ivory towers of power, especially the current administration. But they have fallen into a trap that lies in wait for any of us. Political action on the left, as well as on the right, has a certain allure. It's visible. It earns us praise. It has the potential to make a big difference, and we long to see big changes in our world. The problems confronting our nation and the world at large are huge, as is the work required to combat all of those problems. And so we get busy. We organize, we teach, we argue, we protest, we fight. But if we're not careful, we wear ourselves out until we're too exhausted to respond when we hear that little voice in the night calling out from the next bedroom over, asking for a cup of cold water. Today's lesson reminds us that living authentically, living as we strive to do in the way and in the spirit of Jesus, is first a matter of small, simple, even invisible acts of love. It may not be the modern American way, but it is our way. In our families, sometimes the hardest place to show consistent kindness, in our neighborhoods, in our workplaces, in our social networks, in our schools, one-on-one encounters open our eyes and our hearts to others, grounding us in compassion. Reaching out with a cup of cold water, up close, personal, one-on-one with those who thirst, probably won't get us the praise and accolades that our egos desire. The culture in which we live may not pay much attention to what we're doing, but the people whose lives we touch will. And in time, as we reach out to those who are thirsty, as our vision is changed, as we see the world rightly, as we work side by side with those who have received that cup of cold water, equal partners in the challenging work of our time, change will come. But in all we do, we need to remember that we are called to be faithful, not just successful. We live in a culture dominated by the standard of success. Now, there's no problem with wanting to be successful in our efforts to make the world a better place. We all want our work to count. But that is not our only standard. The great task of love requires a different standard, a countercultural, might I even say, revolutionary standard, the standard of faithfulness. Faithfulness to the needs of others, especially those who struggle for the essentials of life. faithfulness to the skills and abilities with which we each are blessed, faithfulness to the experiences that have shaped us and made us who we are, faithfulness to the people we encounter in the very place where life has brought us, faithfulness to our commitment to love. A cup of cold water, it's not a bad place to start. Amen.